That's right, it's me. Good to be with you this Saturday morning. I hope everybody had a wonderful Thanksgiving. We got so much to be thankful for. I'm glad that we have this radio station where we can deliver encouraging words to others. I realize there's many people listening this morning that probably do not enjoy a great level of health. And sometimes we kind of get caught in a rut of waiting for someone to give us a diagnosis or waiting for someone to tell us exactly what the problem is. But there's a huge difference between waiting to find out what the problem is and then assuming personal responsibility for your own health. I would venture a guess that is the number one thing that you have to focus on doing. You have got to become your own best advocate. So even if you never get the diagnosis that you want that helps explain what's going on, there's still so many options that you have where you can take responsibility for yourself. Let me share with you something I came across a couple weeks ago. Well, hang on. Somebody's trying to call. We'll go to the phone lines. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. This is Dale Coleman from Palestine. I've been listening to Dr. Morgan for quite a few years. I haven't listened much lately. Last week, I listened to what he said. I've been doing what he said. I'm 73 years old. I can run. I can jump. I climb on roofs and under houses and through attics and have no aches and pains.
Does this mean you're a handyman?
Yes, sir. Yes, I am.
Awesome. That's
I
good.
I just thought you'd like to know that.
Well, can I make a comment real quick?
Sure.
A lot of times I come across information that probably nobody else talks about, but you know as well as I do that God has designed the body and we're fearfully and wonderfully made. Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
All right.
I couldn't agree more.
There is an organ system that we have called our nervous system, or the brain, the spinal cord, and the nerves. You got to have them to function. But one of the most overlooked structures in all the body is a nerve called the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is responsible for everything that you're describing to me. If you're 73 and you don't have all these horrible aches and pains and you feel like $1 million, oh my goodness, that means you've got a very high functioning vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is going to be the difference between someone aging very, very gracefully that has very few issues. And if the vagus nerve has very poor tone, that is where you're going to have the most health problems you can think of, because this is the nerve supply to all the organs. It's amazing. There's a neurotransmitter that is associated with someone that has advanced dementia or Alzheimer's. It's called acetylcholine. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, but on one level, it's responsible for short-term memory. So if somebody, you know, walks into the room and they walk back out and come back in again, they go, I can't even remember what I came in here for. And they tell the same story over and over. That would be one indication they have very poor production of acetylcholine. Well, you got to have a strong functioning vagus nerve to make acetylcholine. And so between these two systems right here, between the vagus nerve and the neurotransmitter called acetylcholine, they absolutely have the strongest influence over inflammation in the body. This just means your body can heal quickly versus something happens to you and it just takes you forever to recover, or you don't recover. So this is a great story. I'm so glad you called today.
Well, I can add something else to the story for what it's worth.
Yeah, please do.
My wife died on November the 4th of this year.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
26 days ago. 5 years ago, my oldest daughter said to me, Dad, I'm worried about Mom. And I said, I'm not. And she said, why? I said, because if she doesn't change her ways and how she acts and what she does, she's not going to be alive in 5 years. And my daughter says, what are you going to do then? I said, well, I'm going to go spend the first summer at Philmont Scout Ranch in New Mexico, and then I'm going to Alaska. And she said, can I go to Alaska with you? Anyhow, there is a difference, mm-hmm. and we can make it. And I expect to be healthy as I am 30 years from now.
That's amazing. I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. Now, whereabouts in Palestine do you live? In the city limits or outside the city limits?
West side, just at the edge of the city limits.
Gotcha. All right. I know where you're talking about. Well, thank you so much.
Chancellor Drive.
That sounds like a winner. Thank you so much for your phone call, and I'm so sorry for the loss of your wife. But I can tell you.
I have to tell you one other thing. About 10 years ago, I called in on this show. And I said, you know, 40 years ago, nobody had diabetes. And I think it's the corn syrup. And you said, say on. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also decided that the beginning of Alzheimer's is cholesterol medicine. And so when I went to the
No, go ahead.
So when I went to the doctor and he said, you have high cholesterol, I said, good, I've been trying to get it up there.
What was his response?
Oh, you got this all wrong. You don't understand.
Yeah,
you don't And understand. I said, I think I do understand. You have to have cholesterol to feed the brain, and if your brain shrinks, you get Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm. Amen. You'll get no argument from me.
And he said, Oh, no, really, you need to take this stuff. And I said, you know what? I'm older than you, and I can outrun you. I'm not taking your medicine.
That was 10 years ago?
Yes, that was 10 years ago.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you're a walking, talking testimony. Way to go, buddy.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Oh, boy. Boy, that could open up a can of worms. Of course, I don't mind talking about it. You talk about a drug that might actually be the most worthless drug on the planet. Anyway, I was reading an article about dementia and Alzheimer's, and of course acetylcholine comes up, because without acetylcholine, it's like anything else. You want to have optimal production of this brain neurotransmitter called acetylcholine, as opposed to not having as much as you should. Because if you don't have as much as you should, your body's going to have a lot of inflammation. You're never going to feel good. You're going to tell me that you're in a brain fog. You lose the function of your memory. Yeah, I mean, it's very powerful. Look it up for yourself and see what you come up with. Personally, when somebody walks in my door and they say, my doctor doesn't like it when I read articles on the internet about my condition, they say, leave everything to them. I'm going, no, you got it all wrong. When a person starts reading for the sole purpose of trying to improve their health, that is a good thing. Please become your own advocate. Who else is going to take care of you? If you go down, who is going to take care of you? And of course, you might respond and say, well, there's a couple people, but I don't know that I really want them taking care. Well, I'm not trying to make a joke out of that, but please do everything that you can to maintain the level of strength and the ability to function at a high level. That's what's going to carry you. Obviously, pray and ask God to give you wisdom on what you should do and to make good decisions. But in the study, they were observing that chimpanzees and apes, they sleep primarily on their side. It's not just a small percentage, it's a very high percentage. They're very particular about making a nest up in a tree or on the ground where they can lay on their side. Well, in the study, it showed people that sleep on their backs, they usually develop, with the greatest occurrence, dementia and Alzheimer's, or some other type of neurological decline. If I'm not mistaken, the year 2019, they're estimating now that 10% of the population, if you're alive in 2019, you're going to develop Alzheimer's. Folks, that's a huge number. You're probably thinking, hey, it's just 10%. That means 90 people won't, but 10 people will, yeah, but that number's probably going to grow next year and the year after that, because we're on this downward spiral of our health. And actually, the life expectancy has gone down the last 2 years, and this year's no different. And so there's something happens to you when you sleep on your side. Now, what I want to do is I want to read this to you right here. It won't take me but just a moment. But I found this very interesting. there's a pretty famous medical journal called Circulation Journal. And this study was done in 2008. The researcher's name was Yang et al., which means there were others involved. And what they did was they compared what's called heart rate variability levels with different sleep positions. And I realize that may be a term you haven't heard before, but that's actually a pretty important concept, heart rate variability. The study was done to determine the best positions for patients dealing with coronary artery disease compared with those without any blockages in their coronary arteries. So that's all they did. They looked at individuals that had clogged coronary arteries, that is the artery that feeds and nourishes the heart, as compared to people that have no blockages in their arteries, which is what you want, right? And they noticed that people that have the most blocked arteries, they sleep on their back. You might want to consider that. And so if you want to have a good heart rate variability, do not sleep on your back. When you sleep on your side, that is when it's absolutely the very, very best. So here we go. Highest level of dementia and Alzheimer's is among people that sleep on their backs as opposed to sleeping on their sides. Are you with me on that? Okay. Highest rate of heart disease is among people that sleep on their back as opposed to sleeping on their sides. So there may be something to this research. Okay, what is the highest amount of, what was I going to say here? Anyway, they're saying that when they measure the strength of a human's vagus nerve and heart rate variability, it functions the very best when they sleep on the right side of the body. I think that's interesting. Maybe it's a little bit less on the left side, but you're far better off sleeping on your side. Well, how do you do that? Well, put a pillow between your legs. So if you have an extra long pillow, actually you can go to the store and you can buy those body pillows that are like super long, and you can use it, you can hold it on your side, run it between your feet and your legs and your knees, up through your arms, and it's guaranteed you're going to sleep on your side. So if you want to wash your brain clean every night and rejuvenate, try sleeping on your side. If you want to have, oh, I remember what I was going to say. You know what it's like to have obstructive breathing at night. You snore, or you have a spouse that snores, or you have a child that snores. That's just horrible. I mean, isn't air and oxygen essential to life? Well, of course it is. And if somebody wakes up not refreshed, well, that's a pretty good indication. Or if their mouth is dry when they woke up, well, you know what that means. That means their mouth breathing instead of breathing through the nose. So this is a pretty big deal. So what is the highest occurrence among people that need a CPAP? Something to help shovel or push oxygen or air into their lungs at night so they can breathe. Well, if you try sleeping on your side, the vagus nerve functions better, and that's a nerve supply to your lungs and to your heart, to the stomach and small intestine, the large intestine, your kidneys. The last time I checked, if you want your kidneys working well, you gotta have a good, strong vagus nerve. I was reading that, and this is pretty easy if you know what to look for, but if you watch a person breathe, you can tell if they're breathing only in their upper chest because you notice their chest goes up and down. You never see their stomach move. That would be the diaphragm doing the breathing, which that's your primary muscle. But in this one study, they only measured what happens to the kidneys when somebody breathes in the chest. Well, the kidneys never get that good therapeutic massage by the diaphragm, but when you do diaphragmatic breathing, they're showing that the kidneys move sometimes 2 to 3 centimeters with each breath. To me, that's pretty phenomenal because it massages and squeezes the kidneys to help them work better. I mean, you've heard of somebody that has congestive heart failure. They just don't have any strength. Fluid accumulates around their feet and their ankles. they have swollen legs and they need to take a diuretic, well, maybe we could practice some diaphragm breathing here. You've got nothing to lose. It's free. If you don't know how to do it, I like the gentleman by the name of Patrick McCowan, and I think his name is spelled M-C, capital K, E-O-W-N. And today, you could so easily go on to YouTube, or you could look that up for yourself. If you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. I made myself some tea this morning at the office, and this stuff is still so hot. It's unbelievable. Hey, it looks great. But there's steam rolling off the top of it. It's just a little bit too much. Okay. I have a quote that I read to you last week. I'm going to read it again from Dr. Sir William Osler, M.D. He was born in 1848, and he passed away, unfortunately, in 1919, which means... what's 52 plus 19? Well, he made it to 71. Okay. Actually, 71 is probably quite long in the year 1919. He says, one of the first duties of the physician is to educate the masses to take, not to take medicine. Sometimes when you go to the doctor, you want someone to evaluate you and find out what's not working right. Why do you have this problem? And it used to be that was what was done. Doctors would, put their hands together. Sometimes they would spit into their hands, then rub their hands for emphasis, and say, okay, we're going to have to get down to the nitty-gritty and figure out what's not working right. But I think it's okay if you ask why. So if you have a blood test that comes back, or blood values, or labs, or urinalysis, and there's something that's either high or low, don't you think that's okay to ask, why is it out of balance? This program is Health Essentials. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. And if nobody wants to call and ask a question or make a comment, I'm going to hit the ground running and share some information with you. And so what have you learned so far? If you want your brain to be healthy and your heart to be healthy, maybe you should start sleeping on your side at night. And they have shown that the right side of the body works a little better or is healthier than the left side. And I'm sure there's reasons behind that. Anyway, there's a gentleman that I always enjoyed reading his work. His name is Dr. Norman Doidge. D-O-I-D-G-E-M-D. He's from Columbia University. Anyway, we'll go to the phone lines first. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
I have a question for you.
Sure.
Do you pull toenails?
Do you what?
Do you pull toenails?
Why?
My big toenail, five years ago, I was chasing the kiddos, and I stumped it. And ever since then, it's been growing back into the toe. And you gave me the recommendation of soaking it in castor oil. And I've done that several times, and it still, sometimes it grows out, sometimes it grows in.
When you say grows in, do you mean like an ingrown toenail into the sides of the toe?
Into the side, under the toe, and then out the bottom of the toe sometimes.
Okay. There's another treatment that you could try. It's very, very low cost. It's very simple.
Okay.
It's just taking like a pan and soaking your foot in pure apple cider vinegar.
ACV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It doesn't take much. I mean, just a couple inches at the most and put your foot in there. 10 to 15 minutes, and you could do that every night and see if there's an improvement. Now, to the best of your knowledge, when you walk barefoot, do you have any sore, tender spots in your feet or your toes?
I cannot walk barefooted. It just kills me to walk barefooted.
Well, what do you mean it kills you? Hurting your feet?
My feet are so tender that it does hurt. Even a blade of grass. Even on the carpet in the house.
How long has it been this way?
All my life.
You mean when you were a little boy, you didn't run around outside without shoes and socks on?
That's correct.
Okay.
I had to when I was a child.
Well, see, any time that there's any type of unusual growth of the toenail or the nail bed, I always think, what can I do to improve the lymphatic circulation? How can I increase the growth of nerves and blood vessels to the toes? Because that's the solution to it. Because that's the one remedy that fixes everything. If you could deliver more oxygen and more nutrients to your big toe, that's what make all this would go away. It would just resolve it. And so
wouldn't it continue to grow inside of my toe?
No.
Backwards?
No, it's not. No, it's not supposed to.
I know it's not supposed to, but I stubbed it, and it's been doing that ever since. And I've been fighting infections with it, and it's been growing out the bottom of my toe sometimes.
So when you say infections, what kind do you mean?
My toe gets infected, and I had to go to the hospital and get on ampicillin.
Okay, so you're talking about a bacterial infection.
Uh-huh.
Well, I think if you'll try the apple cider vinegar, the other thing, you're just going to have to accept it through faith and try it and see if it works or not. You can always try I'm not going to call it shock therapy, but when you submerge your foot into a pan of ice-cold water and leave it there for 10 minutes, your body will start releasing what are called cold shock proteins. And so your body, even though this is a shock to the system and it doesn't feel comfortable, and you might go, hey, I don't like walking barefoot, and I sure don't like putting my foot in a pan of cold ice water. But what can happen is you'll increase blood flow and circulation and nutrition. So the number one factor that predicts infections of the toe is going to be how much oxygen you can deliver to the nail bed. And so in my fantasy world, I'd have you walk barefoot on the dirt or the grass every single day for 10 minutes. Because that's the one reproducible way where you can grow twice as many arteries and veins. If we don't have that, then I'd say walk 2 miles every day and call it good.
Well, I do walk about a mile every day. I walk down
that's
to
good.
The creek and back.
You walk where?
Down to the creek. Throw a few rocks into it, and then I walk back.
Oh, that's funny. I love it.
But I walk pretty much all the time. But even on this carpet, I have to have socks on or my slippers on. And I can't have my feet in my slippers without socks.
Well, this is definitely a brain neurological issue. So,
well,
if you were to
hypersensitive.
Well, but it still has to. Well, the nerves are sending information of sensitivity back to the brain, and one of the ways of turning that off is submersing your feet in the cold water.
I'll start trying that.
So I didn't say it was fun. Is it just 1 foot or two?
It's just one. It's my right foot that I stopped when I was chasing the kiddos.
What color are all the other nail beds from the second toe through the fifth? Are they all like normal, or is there a little bit of a yellowish to them?
Yeah, on that foot they're all fine, but on the other foot, the big toe and the second toe are growing kind of crooked, and they're a little bit black.
Well, when that happens, I just think poor blood flow, poor oxygenation, poor lymphatic. And so you could get like a mini trampoline. You could practice jumping up and down barefoot on that and see if you could tolerate that.
Okay, I'll try that too.
But the ice water bath and the apple cider vinegar, those are easy. Those are three easy things that you can do to see if we can change this.
Okay.
It's either that or you get lemons and limes and start rubbing lime juice all over your toenails and nail bed and feet.
Well, I don't need to work with steel-toe shoes anymore, so I figured I don't need the toenail, so I figured I could just have somebody pull them.
Oh, and you know, that's what I thought, is if you went to a podiatrist, they are the ones that would best determine if they just need to remove that toenail and have a brand new one grow in its place.
Oh, I wouldn't want one, a new one to come back.
Oh, I see.
I don't plan on dropping anything on my feet
more. You're not a lumberjack?
No, I still cut wood, though, and split it. But I give up my career of lifting heavy things and climbing ladders and all that.
Did you ever injure that particular toenail or nail bed earlier in your life?
Early in my life?
Yeah, no. Like did you drop something heavy on it, like a piece of angle iron or a pipe?
No.
Okay. If you will be faithful and try those three or four techniques I'm telling you about, see if there's not an improvement. Because, I mean, the body is designed to heal and repair itself if you give it half a chance. So if you every night submerge that foot into ice-cold water for 10 minutes, you can dip it in all the warm water you want after the fact. But I would try soaking it in apple cider vinegar, I would try rubbing fresh lemon juice on it, and then I would try walking barefoot or jumping on a mini trampoline. You can choose any of those that you want to do, and give me some feedback. Let me know what works.
I sure will. I appreciate it, Doc.
You're welcome. Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. Are y'all suggesting that God created toenails for a reason and you don't have to remove them? All right, this is from Norman Doidge, MD. I like this guy right here because he believes in healing. So often you talk to a doctor and they just don't even have a clue what healing's about. They have an idea how to name a disease and how to treat it with a drug or a surgery. But as far as healing and repair, not so much. They don't mind telling you either. They'll say, let me be the doctor. Don't worry about healing. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Hello?
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
In the last few weeks or months, I've started losing my hair much more than I did before.
Okay.
And I'm trying to figure out what would be contributing to that.
Did you have an infection or a fever of any kind?
No. The only thing that's different, I was diagnosed with low iron, and I started taking iron supplements.
Are you taking any drugs that make you lose iron, like aspirin?
Occasionally I'll take a Tylenol.
Well, that's occasionally. That's not every day, is it?
No.
There's a condition called telogen effluvium. You're probably thinking I'm making that up. But what it does is it synchronizes the cycle of the hair where they all fall out at the same time. The number one thing that triggers that, though, is if you had like a viral infection, like if you had a fever with the flu. That would synchronize the hair falling out cycle to where they all fall out at the same time. So, the other thing that you mentioned, literally, iron is the number one element. It's not the only one, but it's the metal that regulates hair regeneration and hair growth. So, if a man is low in iron, and one of the ways of testing that on a blood test, there's a marker called ferritin, F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, ferritin. And usually, when ferritin gets below 40, that's when it's very easy for the hair to stop growing and the hair to fall out.
Well, mine is in the 30s.
Well, have you ever heard of unsulfured blackstrap molasses?
Yes.
I'm going to do my best to give you a sales pitch toward buying a bottle today at Drug Emporium or Natural Grocer or the Granary.
Well, that's wonderful stuff.
It is. And if you would take like a spoonful every single day, let's see if that feeds that pathway. The other thing that I would have you do is, do you know what apple cider vinegar is?
Yes.
If you tried taking just a spoonful of apple cider vinegar, maybe with lemon juice, if you would drink that in water before each meal, that should greatly aid in the assimilation and how you absorb the iron for your hair. Now, the other thing that I'm curious about, there is a structure, you have thousands of them inside each of your cells. They're called mitochondria. If something interrupts the mitochondria, where they become very weakened, it makes it very, very hard for them to work properly. And so if they can't get energy, that's where the hair will fall out also. So I know you've already thought about this, but what is the very substance in the body that carries and transports oxygen to the mitochondria so we can have energy? Well, it's called iron or hemoglobin. And so when you're low in iron, you cannot magnetically transport oxygen into the mitochondria so you can take fat or carbohydrates and convert that into energy. So that may be it right there.
All right. Well, I'm taking iron supplements. And
are you by chance taking any acid-blocking drugs?
Yeah.
Okay, because those are real, real famous for causing iron loss because you've got to have enough acid in your stomach to absorb iron. When the pH of your stomach hits about 5, which is still acidic, you can't absorb anything. It just sits there a long time.
Well, I have sort of a digestive, sensitive digestive system that doesn't always want to function right. So.
Well, I have a good suggestion for you today. After you get off the air with me, I want you to go on a website called YouTube, and I want you to type in vagal tone, V-A-G-A-L, and then tone would be like in muscle tone. So if you will read that, how to improve vagal tone, that will improve you all the way around. You'll definitely be in a better place in 2 or 3 months than what you are right now. But you've got to have strength to make this work.
All right. Well, I appreciate your program, and I appreciate your advice.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for your call, and I hope you have a very good day today.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. 903-586-5257. I'm going to go ahead and read this to you. Dr. Norman Doidge, MD of Columbia University, author of a book, The Brain That Changes Itself. You might want to pay attention to that. He's penned a new, very important book called The Brain's Way of Healing. And here's a very short excerpt from Dr. Norman Doidge's book. One of the core laws of neuroplasticity is that neurons that fire together, they wire together, meaning that repeated mental experience leads to structural changes in the brain neurons that process that experience, making the synaptic connections between those neurons stronger. In practical terms, when a person learns something new, different groups of neurons get wired together. As a child learns the alphabet, the visual shape of the letter A is connected with the sound A. Each time the child looks at the letter and repeats the sound, the neurons involved fire together at the same time and then wire together. The synaptic connections between them are strengthened. Whenever any activity that links neurons is repeated, those neurons fire faster, stronger, sharper, and they signal together. And the circuit gets more efficient and better at helping to perform the skill. What I thought of was, what if you're trying to memorize scripture? You just get better and better at it if you apply yourself. Also, the converse is also true. When a person stops performing an activity for an extended period, those connections are weakened. And over time, many are lost or they waste away. This is an example of a more general principle of plasticity, that it is a use-it-or-lose-it phenomenon. I know that makes sense to you. Thousands of experiments have now demonstrated this fact. Often the neurons that were involved in the skill will be taken over and used for other mental tasks that are now being performed more regularly. Sometimes one can use the use-it-or-lose-it principle to undo brain connections that are not helpful, because neurons that fire apart wire apart. Suppose a person has formed a bad habit of eating whenever he is emotionally upset, associating the pleasure of food with the dulling of emotional pain. Breaking the habit will require learning to disassociate the two. He might have to actively forbid himself from going to the kitchen when he is emotionally upset until he finds a better way to handle the emotions. That's just an excerpt from Dr. Norman Doidge's book. Anyway, I find that interesting. You know, I started thinking. Got a text from a very sweet lady, and she says in the text that her husband had the toenail removed, and he wishes he had not done that because the nail bed has become oh so sensitive ever since then. But you know what I thought about that? Here we have a situation where a person says, I've been this way my whole life. Well, what if you tried to rewire all that to where you can turn that off? You know, 80% of all the nerve fibers are afferent, which means All this information is going from your feet back to the brain. And so how do you change that? Will you give it something different to contend with? And so that may not be a whole lot of fun thinking about walking barefoot. There just may come a point where your body says, oh my goodness, we're telling him that we do not like even walking on carpet barefoot. Well, you can override that. Make your body do it anyway. Obviously, this is not a life or death situation. It's not like you're being asked to walk across, or it's not like I'm asking myself and saying, hey, Roy, you see these hot coals right here? We're going to do a fire coal walk in Hawaii, see what happens. Actually, that's not my idea of fun. Now, if I was in Hawaii, casting a bait over the cliff to catch a large tuna, now that would be my type of excitement. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted your opinion on something. Have you ever heard of Anthony William, the medical medium?
Mm-hmm. I have.
What are your thoughts on him? I've been listening to his podcast. Everything he says, it sounds correct, and that is like gifted. You know, like someone's gifted playing the piano without mm-hmm. even being taught or, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, do you know where he says his gift comes from?
From God.
Right? That's not what I've read.
The spirit.
A spirit. I don't know if you would say that's the spirit of God or not, though.
Yeah.
You know what I thought of? The first thing that popped in my head is King Saul has pretty much lost his kingdom. He is not blessed of God, and he so desperately wants to get in contact with Samuel one last time, even though Samuel is gone. And he goes to the witch at Endor. Anyway, I'm probably wasting your time even talking about that. I don't know what to think about that. I really don't.
Yeah.
Some of it makes me... Here's what I would say. Even from people that have no knowledge of God, they still have what I would call wisdom and good information, right?
Right.
I mean, if you lived in a culture like, let's just say, the Aztecs, and they found out that they could take these bean pods and they could crush them and grind them and they could make this chocolate beverage, well, I would say that's proven to be beneficial. I mean, there's compounds in chocolate called polyphenols that help improve blood flow and circulation, and they help relax the heart. And I'd say, hey, that's good. There's a reason why people mm-hmm. like chocolate. But I'm... what exactly do you want me to say here?
Well, I mean, basically he proposes that what he talks about is all fruits, vegetables.
Mm. Oh, he's got some great information. That's probably what I should say. Can I just say I like a lot of the information that he comes up with. It's just hard for me to get beyond the idea that there's some type of spirit that's instructing him and telling him. I don't really know that's a spirit of God, but then again, you know, I guess a person can make up their own mind. But a lot of his information is very good information.
Yeah. Okay, well, I was just kind of curious as what your opinion was, and I was, you know, a little skeptical, but, you know, I mean,
well,
is
there one thing in particular that you're skeptical about? Because there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, about, you know, his ability to scan someone's body, basically, and tell them
what their problems are. I don't know anything about. So if you're telling me that he has a unique ability when he's face to face with an individual to scan their body and hit the nail on the head, I would be very interested to know what his level of success is.
Well, they've done a lot of interviews, and from what I've seen, pretty accurate. So,
oh, well.
I don't know.
Got to give him credit then.
Yeah. But
cool.
Okay.
That would probably make him in very, very high demand with people that are very sick and infirmed, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, he's done a lot of stars and, you know, stuff like that. And been successful, you know. And, of course, the main thing with him is celery juice.
Well, it's hard to argue with celery juice.
Yes, it is.
I mean, all these things that God has created for us, if we just knew what to do and how to do it. But, yeah, celery juice is very good for the body.
It is. It is. And
getting a person to drink it long term, that's a different ball of wax.
Yeah.
But,
of course, I've been doing it, and it helps.
Oh,
sure.
Then good. Well, see, that's a powerful testimony right there. So you have personally taken celery juice, and you've seen a benefit, right?
Yes.
What would you say is the number one way that's helped you?
You know, the thing about it is it's supposed to help cleanse the liver, detoxify the liver of heavy metals. And, you know, I had a bunch of mercury in my mouth for years from cavities, fillings, and I got those out. But, you know, I'm sure I have still a lot of toxins. And, of course, environmental as well. So, you know, talks about the liver has so many functions and the importance of it.
I would agree.
Yeah, and I mean, besides any medicines we've ever taken, all that.
If you're living in the 21st century, and you are, if you're listening, then you have come in contact with a whole bunch of toxic waste.
Exactly.
That's good. Thanks for your feedback. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Yes, have a good day, ma'am. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, the number is 903-586-5257. One thing I don't want to underestimate is literally, you've got to have electrolytes if you want to generate energy within the human body. And celery provides electrolytes. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Good to talk to you.
Oh, good. Good talking to you, too. Thanks for your phone call.
I made notes when you talked about it back in the past of what is good for bringing down your blood pressure, and I can't find my notes. And I was taking Hartthorn at the time, and I quit. I need to replenish my Hartthorn. Was that what was doing it?
Well, it definitely helps. Hawthorne's going to be one of the greatest remedies of all time when you're trying to get the body back into a good balance. But, yes, I find Hawthorne is very advantageous when you're trying to help your blood pressure.
Okay. I'll replenish that. Now, I've been checking it regularly. It's running 175 over 82 with a 75 pulse rate, somewhere in that area.
You almost beat me to the punch on that, because I was going to say, I read a study this morning before I came on the air, and it said the optimal heart rate.
Yes.
Actually, let me rephrase this. When they measure people that never have heart attacks or they don't have strokes, usually their pulse rate is somewhere around 60 beats a minute. Now, I'm not trying to say that someone that is very athletic, that's in really tip-top shape, there's any problem with a heart rate of 50 beats a minute. That's not what I'm saying at all.
Right.
But for the average person. And so they said that, and this was just book knowledge or research, they said the highest occurrence of heart attacks and strokes and blood pressure problems are among people that have a resting pulse rate of 76 beats a minute or more. And so we could take that information and say, okay, what is my play here? How do I improve this? But the very substance that regulates your heart rate and kidney function is a nerve called the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is what regulates all. That's where your atrioventricular node, your sinus atrial node is. All the things that regulate your heart rate, they come from the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve functions to a large degree based on how stressed or how unstressed you are. So there's a gentleman by the name of Patrick McCowan. He's Irish, so I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Right.
But his last name is spelled McKeown. And if you were to go on YouTube and watch his breathing exercises, that's one of the easiest ways to lower your pulse rate, because what happens is you get your body out of the fight or flight response, you try to knock down the adrenaline and cortisol, and you probably greatly enhance the ability of the body to repair itself. That's usually what's called your parasympathetic state.
Okay.
So if your pulse rate went from 75 down to 60, I would say that's a move in the right direction. So to answer your question, here's a lot of the things that you can do to really change that. Number one, you know how the woman said earlier that she's a fan of using celery juice as being promoted by Anthony Williams?
Right.
I am a huge fan of the use of lemon and lime juice, and one of the reasons why is, just like celery juice gives you what is called organic sodium, lime and lemon juice, they give you organic potassium, which potassium, it feeds what's called the parasympathetic nervous system, and it helps relax the body. Now, you've been in situations, I have too, where we've had way too much tension or we've had way too much stress. Well, you know as well as I do, that can't continue forever because stress will kill you if it goes on, right?
Right.
And I'm guessing you've had a few events in your life that you really wish you didn't have to go through, but you did, and but God carried you through it, and He's faithful, and you're in a better place now than what you were by His good hand of favor and grace upon you. But if you were to start to squeeze lemon juice or lime juice into water or herbal tea, which a good herbal tea would be one that contains hibiscus, that has been shown to lower blood pressure. But your blood pressure readings, what did you say the numbers were, 171?
Yeah, I'm running 175, 174, 179, in that range.
What is the lower number again?
170. Back in July, it was down to, let me look back on.
Did you say it was 175 over 90?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What you have is you have what's called a wide pulse pressure gap. That means there's a big difference between the top number and the bottom number. And I'm just rounding it off, so 175 minus 90 is 85 points. What we got to do is not so much that lower number, but we got to get that top number to come down. What this means is your body is just too stressed.
Okay.
And so if you'll go onto YouTube and just type in how to breathe correctly, it's going to be different than what you think. It's going to be radically different than what you think, but it's mechanical. But it literally will change the function of your body for the better if you'll do that. But your blood pressure will come down because nasal breathing is what's going to generate the most nitric oxide, which relaxes your blood vessels.
Yes, okay.
So between hibiscus tea, the herb called hawthorn, I always think one of the most critical minerals of all time is magnesium and zinc, or minerals, magnesium and zinc, because without those, you just can't quite regulate blood pressure. Now, for most people, they just don't get enough of what are called phospholipids to help regulate nerve function, to calm their brain and their body. You get phospholipids from eating organ meats. So, if you want to eat liver today, then have at it.
I have a real issue with liver. My dad, I thought it was chicken fried steak, and he made me eat a large serving. And I promised him I got through that, I'd never touch liver again. I've kept that word for 65 years, but I know liver's good for you. I won't try to.
Well, there's other ways of doing it. You can actually order online, unless you find at the store, they sell cod livers in a little can like sardines, but it's just cod liver. But really, organs are going to be the only source of the phospholipids that are going to be really, really good for you. And I realize people don't like it. But, you just have to decide, what am I here for? Why is God using me? Well, if you're still alive.
My health is more important than my likes.
Yeah, God has a use for you. But you just have to find out what you can do. But if you have some organ meats, that's what's going to radically improve you for the better over time.
All right, will do. Okay.
Okay.
All right, thanks for that, Doc.
You're welcome. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your phone call. I appreciate you very much. I hope your weekend goes very well. Okay, there's some time left in the program. Plenty of time for another phone call. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning. How are you today?
Well, good morning. I'm fine. And you?
Oh, good. So glad you called.
I have a great-grandson that I think has some form of autism. And the reason he functions very well, but he will only eat certain things like peanut butter sandwich. Very little else. No vegetables, no meat. He's fascinated with anything that moves, a motor, a fan, or anything like that. He's 4 years old. he screams and hollers. His daddy has to cut his hair because they will not take him to a barber shop. Is there anything that can be done for him?
How does he sleep at night?
What's that?
How does he sleep?
He sleeps evidently very well.
Does he wake up happy?
He seems to be. He's happy all the time.
Is there one time of the day that he's more prone to kind of having one of these emotional eruptions?
No, it doesn't seem to be. It just seems he only gets upset mostly when he gets a haircut. Like any other normal kid, what concerns me is not eating.
Well, can I allow me to just to tackle this one point at a time, because I don't know how to, just too big a topic to digest in one swat. So the very first form of cholesterol that was ever discovered was called cholesterol sulfate. I don't expect anybody's ever heard of cholesterol sulfate, but that's when researchers begin to study cholesterol. They said, what is it? Oh, it's cholesterol sulfate. That's what we're going to look for. But they noticed that when, and just forgive me the way that I'm wording this, because I'm being kind of blunt, I know, so I know you cut me some slack, but when children have autism or they have Asperger's,
it could be, I don't think his parents, and I've talked to his grandparents, and they don't seem to think there's a problem.
Okay, well.
But, you know, I'm just an old lady.
Well, yeah, but you've also had a lot of years to observe a whole bunch of children. You probably know behavior that's normal and behavior that might not be normal.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, a lot of times when there's behavior like this, there's a very significant sulfur deficiency.
Sulfur deficiency?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And so I know I'm making this sound simplistic, but if you have a child that maybe doesn't behave according to the great-grandmother's standard, then I would say, how much time does a child spend out of doors? Because usually it takes about an hour and a half to perform a process called sulfation. I realize there's not a lot of sunshine out right now, but maybe later today there'll be sunshine. But when kids go outside and play and they have sunshine, you know, come in contact with their skin, this helps generate sulfur production.
Well, he loves outdoors, but I don't know how much time he gets to be outdoors, you know.
Almost always, when there's a situation like this, I find that the child has some type of a food intolerance or allergy that's driving some type of neurological addiction process.
Okay.
And so identifying what that is can be beneficial, but until the parents see an issue. I mean, is he functional on every other level?
Yes.
He's real social. He's a happy kid.
Yes.
But he only eats peanut butter sandwiches.
When he's out, like, I was with him recently. We went out to eat. Now, he's very timid around strangers. But family, he's just happy and loving and smart as can be. But, you know, I'm just concerned about his health. And
well, let me say it a different way. I mean, there's so many nutrients that a child needs to grow and develop. And unfortunately, they're just not all found in just peanut butter and bread.
That's okay.
He needs more than that.
He needs more than peanut butter sandwich, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he does. I mean, for example, I mean, half of the dry weight of the brain is pure cholesterol. He's got to have cholesterol. So when you feed a child eggs, you're giving them the very things they need to build a brain. They've said also that, you know, the brain's nearly, I mean, minus the water in the brain, it's just about pure fat. And so you got to give the brain the very thing that it needs to function. So one of the oils that human beings cannot make, or fats, is called an omega-3 fatty acid. You've got to have that for proper brain function. So it's just a question of how soon we get to this. And anyway, I know why you're calling. You just want him to have the very best chance to have a good go in this world and not be held back because function's lost.
Right. And, you know, like the other day, he got his daddy's floor jack. He was going to jack up the pickup. He's 4 years old.
Well, he must have seen somebody do that before, right?
Right.
Did he figure out how to use a floor jack?
He does.
I'm thinking, does the floor jack weigh as much as he does?
It probably does.
I've seen some big floor jacks that would weigh more than a four-year-old.
That's right. Well, I just wanted your observation, and I'll see what I can do to get them to...
Well, let me know how this plays out, okay?
All right.
Thank you for your phone call, and I hope you have a great weekend, ma'am.
Well, you do the same.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, there's a little bit of time left in the program. Actually, 2 minutes. Actually, less than 2 minutes. But time for another phone call. If you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. Hello, welcome to the program.
Hey, is this Dr. Morgan?
It is. How are you?
Doing fine. The reason I'm calling is I've been having problems with my sugar, and I'm trying to bring it down. And then the other thing is I've been having a lot of bubbles in my urine. Never had that before.
Well, that's a pretty good sign. Your kidneys are struggling. So getting your blood sugar down is going to solve a lot of issues. Where would you like your blood sugar to be? What would make you happy?
Well, as normal as I can get it.
Well, what would that number be for you?
Oh,
70?
Probably around a 5. Well, yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, well, tell me where it is right now.
It's kind of high. It's almost around 300.
All right, if you would do these things, we could probably cut it in half in about 1 week. If you would just avoid all grains, what I want you to do is just focus on eating vegetables and clean sources of meat. That's all I want you to do.
Okay.
Now, if you ate two meals a day, we'll get it to about 120 instead of 150.
Okay, vegetables and just like chicken or beef or just...
That's it. Mm-hmm. If you will eat vegetables and meat, if you will avoid all grains and sugar and just load up on vegetables and meat, if you ate two meals a day, it'll be 150 before you know it. There's one herb called gymnema. If you'll start taking gymnema, we'll cut that blood sugar in half pretty quick.
How do you spell that?
G-Y-M-N-E-M-A. Gymnema.
Can I get that at Drug Emporia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should be able to. Very, very powerful. It rejuvenates the pancreas. That's what you want. If you'll do just these two things and start walking, what you got to do is you got to train your body to become more efficient at converting sugar and fat into energy. And if that happens, you'll win every bit of this and you'll reverse all of it.
Will the bubbles kind of start going away too?
Well, yeah, and if you eat two meals a day, you're going to be giving your kidneys a major vacation.
So just eat two meals a day.
Yeah, if it's becoming foamy, that's a pretty good sign that your kidneys are really, really starting to really struggle big time. So I think it's good to pay attention to that. Unfortunately, we're completely out of time. But if you'll call me next week, we'll just pick it up where we left off, and I'll be glad to tell you the rest of it for the kidneys, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.